This morning is United States against Savard. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Chief Judge Efron, may it please the court. There's a presidentially prescribed regulation which provides that upon request, a party is entitled to an Article 39A session to present argument or evidence concerning the disposition of a written motion. In this case, the military judge twice denied defense written motions without holding requested Article 39A sessions. The two central issues in this case are
now,
first.
The thing at the beginning was a 39A session, wasn't it? Didn't they, at page 10 or whatever that is, they have a 39A session?
Yes, sir.
And then they talked about at least the questionnaire issue, did they not?
They reviewed the fact that it had been denied, Your Honor.
Okay. Why isn't that a 39A session?
Well, Your Honor, it is a 39A session, but it isn't a 39A session that satisfies 905H, Your Honor.
Why?
The Queen of Hearts is famous for saying sentence first, verdict afterwards. It isn't sufficient to have ruling, a denial first, hearing afterwards, Your Honor.
But it's before the trial begins, so therefore before voir dire, is it not?
It was before voir dire, but Your Honor, it was after the military judge had already ruled.
So your case depends on a decision that you always have to have the 39A before the trial and before the decision's taken. He couldn't have reconsidered at that point.
Your Honor, there could be a request for reconsideration, but the problem is that under 905F, a military judge need not reconsider. So it doesn't give the party what they're entitled to say you can ask for reconsideration later.
So you won the case as long as he didn't have it before he made his decision.
Well, there is an error. There's a 905H error.
Right.
And it's interesting, Your Honor, of course, the government changed its position in this case on Thursday. The government's previous position was a judge had discretion not to hold a 905H Article 39A session. The government's new position appears to be a judge has no such discretion, but the judge is required to isn't required to hold the session before denying the motion. And if I understand the government says if the ruling is prior to the effect, if the Article 39A session is held prior to the effect of the ruling on the motions taking place. Importantly, in this case, in one of the instances where the judge didn't give the 39A session, the effect of the ruling had already occurred. The motion was to prevent depositions. The motion to prevent depositions was filed on the 21st of March. It was denied 95 minutes later without holding a requested 39A session, and with the military judge expressly saying, I'm not going to hold an Article 39A session. Those depositions were then held on April 23rd and April 24th before any Article 39A session in this case. And then finally, the parties went on the record on May 13th. So with respect to that motion, the effect of the denial had already occurred before there was ever an Article 39A session. So even with respect to the government's new standard, there was error with regard to that motion. So with regard to the other motion, which involved the motion to reconsider the denial of a request for expanded members questionnaire, then the question with regard to that issue is it sufficient to hold the 39A session after the military judge has already denied? And as Judge Baker and I were discussing, the answer to that question is no. And one of the reasons is, again, that the president surely didn't mean to say that...
You're arguing for a literal interpretation of the rule. You got your session. That's a literal interpretation of the rule.
Your Honor, appellant did not get what he's entitled to under the rule, because the rule says that the upon request, either party is entitled to a 39A session to present oral argument or have an evidentiary hearing concerning the disposition of written motions. Your Honor, there was never an Article 39A session in this case to have an evidentiary hearing concerning the disposition of written motions or to have oral argument on that written motion. Didn't happen, Your Honor.
What was there an Article 39A session for?
There was an Article 39A session for a number of reasons, Your Honor, including to append printouts of the previous rulings to the record and to assign them.
The matter was discussed, was it not?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The matter was discussed in the session, was it not?
The fact that there had been a motion that was denied was discussed, Your Honor. The merits of it were not discussed, Your Honor, because the merits of them had already been resolved.
Was counsel prevented from discussing the merits? Or did counsel just elect not to?
Your Honor, there was no discussion of the merits, but the ruling had already been made. And it's under the Sherrod case, once that ruling once the military judge proceeded to deny the motion without having held the request at 39A session, there was error at that moment, Your Honor. The error had already been committed. And it isn't good enough to say to the defense, hey, you can raise this for the third time, Your Honor. Now, there comes a point where certainly counsel is going to try the military judge's patience. And to say, you can ask, the defense had said once, we want this. And the first request had not asked for a 39A session, Your Honor. Then the defense comes back again and says, hey, Your Honor, please reconsider, and we want a 39A session. And then the military judge at that point denied the motion without holding the 39A session. So that was error right then when the military judge denied that motion without holding the 39A session, Your Honor. And again, that error wasn't later fixed with the military judge coming back on the record and saying, okay, I'll hear your views now. Okay, you can present evidence now. That didn't happen. Everyone treated it as a fait accompli, Your Honor, because it was a fait accompli. By the time they got on the record, everyone understood that issue was resolved. And it had been resolved against the defense without giving the defense that to which it was entitled. And to get back into the standard of review issue, Your Honor, it isn't sufficient to give the defense an opportunity to seek reconsideration, because under 905F, the military judge need not reconsider. So it doesn't put the appellant in the position he would have been in had there been the requested Article 39A session before a ruling to say, oh, you can go on the record later and ask the judge to reconsider, because it's a different standard of review. So it doesn't put him in the position that he should have been in had the military judge not violated RCM 905H with his initial ruling.
Let me ask you a slightly different question, Mr. Sullivan. How would the military judge, assuming that he had these hearings, how would it have been an abuse of discretion for the military judge to deny either or both of these motions?
Your Honor, it would not necessarily have been.
In what way did the defense counsel present extraordinary circumstances and a demonstration of compelling need with respect to the use of the change members questionnaire to the military judge in his motion for reconsideration or otherwise?
Your Honor, the defense counsel had not yet done so, but the defense counsel was deprived of the form for doing so when the defense counsel was not given the opportunity to make oral argument and present evidence to which 905H entitled the defense. So the fact that it wasn't in the three-page motion to reconsider, that actually highlights the error in this case, Your Honor, because he was supposed to get one more shot at it. He was supposed to get one more bite at the apple, and the military judge denied him of that. And interestingly, in the military judge's ruling the day after the motion was submitted, he agreed that he would reconsider his earlier ruling. It wasn't where he says, no, I'm not going to reconsider. He has the discretion to reconsider or not reconsider. He chose to reconsider. And he said, I'm going to reconsider, and then on the basis of just that three-page motion, denied the defense request. But he didn't give the defense the opportunity to have the oral argument and evidentiary hearing to which they were entitled before he exercised his discretion whether to grant or deny that request, Your Honor. And Your Honor asked, how did the military judge abuse his discretion with regards to either? On the basis of the record as it exists, he did not, Your Honor. But it could have risen to the level of an abuse of discretion if things had played out in certain ways during those evidentiary hearings. But more to the fact, the military judge might simply have chosen to exercise his discretion differently had the defense received the evidentiary hearings and opportunity for oral argument to which they're entitled. I mean, we can assume that oral argument does make a difference. We can assume that oral argument is capable of influencing decisions. Otherwise, what are we doing here this morning? So we believe that the defense was deprived of a meaningful procedural protection when the military judge proceeded to deny both of these motions without having had the Article 39A sessions. Now, because the military judge violated 905H, the burden rests on the government to show that that error was harmless. And the government cannot carry that burden, particularly with respect to the members' questionnaire issue. There's no reason, as we cited the Air Force Code of Judicial Conduct, one of the hallmarks of the military judge is to be open-minded. There's no reason to assume that this military judge would have been so intransigent that had the defense, in fact, made a compelling case four expanded members' questionnaires. He would have denied the defense the opportunity to submit those. And a compelling case could have been made. Military justice favors members' questionnaires. There's substantial evidence that indicates that jurors, civilian jurors, are more forthcoming and candid when responding to written questionnaires than they are during oral voir dire in a court-martial. I'm sorry, in a court setting.
What was wrong with the voir dire that was conducted?
Your Honor, there were two problems with the voir dire that was conducted. The first is the medium. As we said in our reply brief, you're well familiar with Marshall McLuhan's famous statement, the medium is the message. Here, the medium provides the prejudice, Your Honor. Because in this case, the defense was asking about some sensitive topics during the voir dire, and it could be expected that the answers would be more candid and more full if it had been in writing rather than orally. And there's also one particular moment during this voir dire that's telling, Your Honor. And that is, there was a question of the members whether any of them had ever been a witness in a previous proceeding. And initially, it was a negative response from all members. And then one of the members said, hey, wait a second, I'm thinking. And that's just a sign of why it's consistent with human experience that answers to a written questionnaire would be fuller than the standard negative response from all members that we do during in-court voir dire, Your Honor, because the members have a chance to think about it.
Isn't this an argument that can be made in every case that doesn't utilize written questionnaires?
It could, Your Honor, but again, we are not saying, as I had the discussion with Judge Ryan earlier, we're not saying that the judge abused his discretion in denying the written members' questionnaire. That's not our contention, Your Honor. Our contention is that the judge erred.
But in talking about prejudice here, I mean, yes, in getting to that.
Yes, sir. The prejudice was not being able to persuade the military judge to have the written members' questionnaire. And so for purposes of thinking about it.
But let's take that a little further. So let's follow on. If the prejudice was not being able to persuade the military judge, how did that prejudice the defendant in this case, since essentially most of those questions were asked orally, certainly you have a study out there that shows that people aren't as forthcoming orally as they are in writing. But, you know, that's one study. There's hundreds of studies out there that say all kinds of things. How can you take that argument and raise that to the threshold of prejudice?
Well, Your Honor, first, we believe there's a consistency in the studies, and we cited a number of sources in the brief that all indicate that. And again, it's in accord with human experience that the members would be more expansive, more forthcoming, more candid in a written questionnaire than they would be in the rather stilted way we do voir dire in a courtroom setting, Your Honor. But beyond that, it's important to note that there are some questions that were in the written questionnaire that were not asked during the voir dire. And one of them concerned credit counseling, Your Honor, which could be a particularly important issue in this case. And it's understandable why the defense, if a neutral questionnaire is going out to the members that it doesn't advertise, this is coming from the defense, you don't run the risk that the defense is going to offend the members by putting that out in that neutral format, Your Honor. But where the defense is perceived as prime, or it's the defense perceived as prime, it's understandable that a counsel would tactically choose not to ask some questions orally that the counsel would want asked if the counsel's name isn't attached to the question. And in this case, the credit counseling issue might very well have been one of those. It's remarkable that it was on the written questionnaire, but wasn't on the proposed in-court voir dire, Your Honor.
But might very well have been. Does that constitute prejudice? I mean, that's pretty speculative.
Well, it does, Your Honor. Again, because the defense was deprived of the opportunity to persuade the military judge, and this comes in a setting, in a court-martial setting, where there are two important things, Your Honor. First, the defense.
They weren't deprived of the opportunity. They were deprived of the opportunity at a 39A session in person.
Yes, Your Honor. They were deprived of the opportunity to persuade the military judge orally and through the presentation of evidence as the president entitled them.
Right. Now, I understand, but you made it sound as if they had no chance.
Oh, they had their written motion, Your Honor. We certainly don't disagree with that at all, Your Honor. There was another procedural step to which they were entitled. They were deprived of that procedural
step. They had all this additional stuff to bring in that they didn't manage to put into their written motion.
Well, Your Honor, first they had the option of putting on additional stuff, but secondly, again, they had the opportunity for just this sort of dialogue with the military judge, and we would think that, again, this sort of dialogue would be much more effective in getting the military judge to think about something. But again, military law favors precisely what the counsel was attempting to do in this instance. But Judge Urban, there are two important things that we think are at play here. One is, of course, the defense compared to the convening authority has very limited opportunity to influence the panel. And so the exercise of the defense counsel's peremptory challenge is particularly important. It's interesting to note that in this case, the defense had a denied challenge for cause and then used the peremptory challenge against that member and indicated that if the challenge for cause had been granted, they would have used the peremptory challenge against another member. You know, so is it possible that their challenge for cause could have been strengthened by the results of the written questionnaire?
Now you're piling speculation on speculation.
Yes, Your Honor, it is speculation, but the reason for the speculation, Your Honor, is that the military judge didn't give the appellant that which the president said he was entitled to. And the burden, Your Honor, rests on the government. So to the extent that the record makes unclear what would have happened had the judge complied with 905H, then that goes against the government, Your Honor, because it's the government that bears the burden to show that the error was harmless, not our burden to show that the accused was harmed. And it's just like in the Navy Court of Military Review's decision in the Shower case. You know, we don't know what the voir dire of the military judge would have revealed in that case, but it's the very fact that we don't know that required that the findings and sentence be set aside in that case. And similarly here, we don't know what would have happened had the judge complied with 905H. But because he didn't, the burden is on the government, and it cannot carry that burden, Your Honor.
Don't you think it would make your job a little bit easier if you could tell us what compelling need that would have been produced with respect to the questionnaire, or what reason it is that would have been given that wasn't in the written motion as to why the depositions, even though should not be conducted, even though the military judge found that they were unavailable and that they were necessary?
Well,
I mean, I'm just saying. We have nothing.
Your Honor, I see my time has expired. If I could have
you can answer the question.
Thank you. Your Honor, I suspect that both parties would have preferred more explanation about what would have happened next. But the question is, what is the impact of that void? And again, the impact of that void is it interferes with the government's opportunity to carry its burden to show harmlessness, Your Honor.
You have an opportunity on rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Your
Honor. Counsel for the government.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I am Major Coretta Gray, and I, along with Colonel Don Christensen, represent the United States in this case. To be clear, while the facts and the law haven't changed, the government's argument has evolved. We would acknowledge that the defense is entitled to an Article 39A session concerning the disposition of written motions, and the facts show that appellant did receive an Article 39A session concerning the disposition of his written motion.
Well, counsel, in fairness, was it regarding the disposition, or did it simply reiterate what the disposition had been? I mean, I don't think you would disagree that a session held after the fact is fairly meaningless.
Well,
I mean, as a matter of practicality. I mean, as a matter of formalism, you can say, well, it doesn't specify, and that session shall be held before a decision is made. But as a matter of reality, wouldn't you expect that it would be held before a decision was made?
Well,
don't you think that's what the rule contemplates?
We would, Your Honor, we would certainly say that the rule does not say that. It doesn't say prior to trial, it doesn't say prior to the ruling. What we think the rule contemplates is that the appellant get a chance to make his position heard before the military judge. Certainly, in most cases,
in person, right?
He has the opportunity to make his case known in person.
Don't you think that in the sense of make his case, that you are making your case in order to help a judge reach a decision, not after a decision has been made?
Well, we would acknowledge that in most cases, the judge is probably going to have that oral argument prior to him making the ruling. But what we are saying is that the rule doesn't require that. It doesn't say that. And so usually, typically, there probably would be the opportunity to hear oral argument about what's already been put in writing.
Is that the recommended practice, to hold a hearing after a decision has been made?
Councilman, would you like us to issue our opinions before or after oral argument? Generally speaking.
While we would acknowledge that oral argument is important and can be helpful, what we're saying is let's look at the RCM. The RCM doesn't say prior to the ruling, doesn't say prior to court. And that's what appellant wants to read into it. Now, certainly in most instances, that would probably be the case. And certainly in most instances, that's probably what the parties are going to be anticipating. But there are cases, there may be cases such as this one, where the judge gave a plethora of reasons as to why a 39A was not going to be held prior to trial. And those were the words he used, prior to trial.
Counsel, did the judge say in this case, here's my ruling, I'm going to give you an opportunity to argue it now?
Did he say that? No, right. Your Honor. I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Did the judge say in this case, I'm going to set forth my ruling so that you'll know where I'm coming from, but I'll give you an opportunity to argue it and present evidence? Did the judge do that in this case?
He did not. On the second issue regarding the depositions, he said, I will not have a 39A prior to trial, and he ruled. And the first issue concerning the court member questionnaires, there was no objection.
So at what point did the military judge articulate that he was complying with Rule 905H?
Well, I'm not sure that he had to articulate it. At 0950 on the 13th of May, there was an Article 39A hearing. In that session, the military judge specifically asked about the appellate exhibits 3 that had to do with the military judge's denial of the court member questionnaires.
Is that what you refer to as the plethora of reasons he gave for not having a 39A?
No, Your Honor.
What are those plethoras?
The plethoras of reasons that he talked about, and this is specifically having to do with the deposition, was that he said, in light of, and this is at Joint Appendix 101, in light of the urgency stated by the defense, in light of a looming trial date of 1 April 08, in light of the date of the ordered deposition.
That relates to the second one, not the first one.
It does, Your Honor.
But isn't it true that by the time any 39A session was held that these issues were discussed at, that those depositions had already taken place?
Well, it's true that the depositions had already taken place, but, Your Honor, it's also important to note.
So at that point, the issue was somewhat moot, wasn't it?
Well, it really was moot at the time that they put in a motion to forbid depositions. These depositions were ordered by the convening authority. They weren't ordered by the military judge. The military judge, as he made clear, only could rule about whether they would be admissible.
But doesn't that go to the question of prejudice and not to the issue as to whether or not the RCM was complied with? Let me ask you this a slightly different way. If we disagree with you that the post-decision 39A satisfy the rule, do you lose? Do you lose this case?
We don't lose this case.
Well, then why don't you talk about your other argument? I'm just wondering why the government is requesting a stretched interpretation of the RCM if it has another argument to make.
Well, I would point out, Your Honor, that we don't think it's a stretched interpretation because we're reading directly from the rule. The rule says to get an Article 39A.
How about contrary to the logical sequence of most litigation events in the rest of the world?
But we want to argue this way, Your Honor, so that we don't tie the military judge's hands on situations where they may need to rule before hearing oral argument. For instance, in the case as here, where the parties are all across the world, in a case where the appellant may not give up his right to be present before an Article 39A.
But in this case, the defense counsel said that he was available for a telephonic Article 39A session.
Well, he said he was available by telephone, but he said nothing about his client and whether his client. The rule, Article 39A, requires that the appellant, that the client be present, and the defense counsel, and the trial counsel, that it be in the client's presence. So there was no discussion about that. And what we're saying is we don't want to tie the military judge's hands for those instances where it is necessary to rule, maybe because of some exigent circumstances or some declining evidence, where it's necessary to rule before hearing oral arguments, especially in the case where the effect of the ruling has not taken place. In this case, the military judge could not have stopped those depositions whether he wanted to or not. He could decide whether they were admissible at court. And he made that clear in his response to the defense counsel that this has nothing to do with whether they're admissible. So the issue really is that's really failure to state a motion, because there's really nothing that he could do about that. The government could have him, and the judge could do nothing. In regards to the court member questionnaires, there really was never even discussion by anyone saying, I object because I didn't have my Article 39A, and the judge actually never specifically talked about the Article 39A like he did with the deposition.
Did the defense counsel make a motion for an Article 39A with respect to the questionnaire?
They wrote at the bottom, we request an Article 39A, but at no time did they say, I object, when they didn't receive an Article 39A.
Why do they have to object if the judge does? Who's responsible for scheduling the Article 39A? Is it the defense counsel, the trial counsel, or the military judge?
I think the military judge would schedule the 39A, but our point is that the defense counsel has to say, I object to not having a 39A, as opposed to, I object to not giving my court member questionnaires, which was really the substantive issue is what the defense counsel complained about. Never once did they say, I object because I didn't get my Article 39A.
So the government's position is, once a motion is made and the military judge denies the motion, that's not ripe for appeal. It's no big deal. You just move on. You then have to either request reconsideration or you have to take some other action in order to ripen that issue for appeal. I mean, I've never heard of that in any court system.
No, Your Honor. Based on RCM 905E and MRE 103, we're saying that failure by a party to make a timely objection at trial raised the issue on appeal absent plain error. And in this case...
But that's an objection to something that's going on in trial. That's not an objection to a ruling by the court.
But there was really no ruling by the court on, I am not going to give you an Article 39A hearing. There was a ruling on, I'm not going to allow you to do these court member questions.
I thought he said in his ruling, I'm not going to, given the time constraints, I'm not going to have a 39A.
And that had to do with the deposition. And in that case, I would say that that was preserved. And so you would look at it in a de novo standard. But especially
So if you don't mention it, you ignore it, and issue your ruling, then it's no longer preserved for the defense.
No, Your Honor, I guess what we're saying is that the defense needs to say, I didn't get my Article 39A. But even in the situation where if you believe they did enough by typing the line at the end of the paper, that even still, they did receive an Article 39A session. They received it
after trial. And there's you don't see any due process concerns where the regulation gives the right to a hearing on a written motion. The judge issues his decision, and then your argument is that after the decision is issued, he's holding omnibus 39A, many issues are coming up in it, and that's sufficient to meet the requirements of the regulation.
Yes, Your Honor, by the plain language language of the regulation, which does not say prior to trial and which does not say prior to ruling. Because, again, at the 39A, if the judge had decided to change his mind when the defense did not take their opportunity to add oral argument or present evidence, but if they had and the judge changed his mind, he could have given the questionnaires to the court members then.
Do we know was the government prepared to argue those two motions at that hearing?
Were they prepared to argue? Well, the military judge gave...
It wasn't noticed up for that purpose at all, was it?
The military judge gave both parties an opportunity to put anything else that they wanted on the record about these two issues, and specifically regarding the second issue of the deposition, he asked them if they wanted to supplement the record with any more materials. Are there any other issue with my statement of where things stand? Do you wish to supplement with any materials? And the defense counsel said, no, Your Honor, we don't wish to supplement any materials. So the opportunity was there for both parties to add anything else that they wanted to, and the judge went through each motion separately, and that was their opportunity, and it was before trial, and the judge was obviously going to allow them, if he was going to let them put on more evidence or argue, that meant that his mind was not so made up that he couldn't reconsider, just as the rules allow in RCM 905F, where there can be reconsideration. So what we're saying is the logical interpretation of this rule is, up until the point that the effect of the ruling has taken place, or up until the point that there is no more opportunity to have the judge change his mind, that the military judge can give them an opportunity to do their oral argument, and he can change his mind. But if they don't have anything else to add, which they didn't in this case, when there is no prejudice, which there isn't in this case, when they've received an Article 39A prior to the effect of the ruling taking place, the appellant is in a good position and his rights have not been violated.
Now, let me get this clear. It's the government's position that when the judge makes a ruling on a motion, that is not preserved unless the losing party objects to the judge's ruling.
No, Your Honor. In this case, we have a rule that says upon request. In this case, if you have you make a request,
and they made a request, they denied the request,
and they got no answer about their request for the Article 39A. The only answer had to do with the substance.
Well,
he issued
a decision. So, I mean, I think a logical person would say that if you're requesting a hearing on a motion and the judge rules on the motion, doesn't give you a hearing, the hearing's been denied.
And then that's where the appellant could say, I object. Preserved for the record, everything is taken care of.
Well, it's just unusual that the government is saying that parties have to object to judges' rulings. Generally, they object to issues that are brought up by the other party.
I think the difference is because here it's an upon request situation. So if you make the request and you hear nothing about your request, then you say, hey, I didn't get the request that I made. You hadn't said anything about it. Let me have my opportunity to say something. They didn't do that. So we're not saying at all times, for every situation, that it's not preserved unless there's an objection. We're saying in this case where it's an upon request situation, then you need to say something. But regardless, no matter how you feel about that, at the end of the day, the government still wins because, one, he received an Article 39A the day of trial prior to the effect of the ruling taking place, keeping in mind that the depositions really made no difference. The forbidding of the depositions really made no difference because the judge could not actually forbid the depositions from taking place, or there would be no effect of him forbidding that, but also considering that there was no prejudice, because here we're talking about timing. There was the position of the appellant in front of the judge in writing, even in a reconsideration. When the appellant was presented with an opportunity to clarify at trial, to supplement materials even, he did not take advantage of that. He said no.
Don't you think that most judges, once they have trial judges, once they have made a ruling, I deny your motion to submit, you know, a member's written questionnaire in the format that you've given me, would be, to put it mildly, highly irritated if at trial then the defense counsel said, oh, here is the written questionnaire that I would like you to give to the members. I mean, I just see you seem to be saying that even though the military judge ruled on motion, he didn't really rule on motion because there was a 39A session where the defense counsel could have said something more, done something more, even though it had already been denied. And the military judge did not say, I'm open to revisiting my earlier motion. Does anyone have anything? He just said this, what they say in every case. Does anyone have anything else to present? Does anyone have anything else to bring up? Is there anything other matter that we need to bring up and discuss now? That's a very generic sort of occurrence.
Your Honor, I guess what I would take the issue a little bit with how it was couched here. The military judge gave him an opportunity to say something. They chose not to. However, the issue is whether the appellant would be objecting to not having the 39A, to not having the oral argument, as opposed to him irritating the judge because he's saying, we're once again saying you ruled against us on the motion. They have an opportunity to request reconsideration based on the rules. Even if that's irritating to the judge, they have that right, and if it's in their client's best interest, they're going to take that right.
This goes back to the chief judge's question before, which is whose responsibility is it to schedule a 39A session? One was requested, right? The ruling was made by the military judge. Whose response? I mean, why did they have to raise it again? I agree with you that this would be an easier case with respect to that issue if they had raised it again, but why do they have to?
Because if they're saying that things would have changed if I had had an opportunity to let the judge hear my oral argument, that I had something new to present, I had something especially special that would make the judge change his mind based on despite everything I've already put in my written statement and the reconsideration, then it would be up to them to say, you haven't ruled on my request to have oral argument, to have the 39A, while you may have ruled on the actual substance of the motion. And even if you've ruled, I want my opportunity to speak to change your mind. And they have that opportunity under RCM 905. What we're saying is that this, while this is probably an unusual situation and it's not going to happen in every case, that we should not tie the military judge's hands where there may be a situation where they need to rule before having a
counsel. We're in the defense brief, and I'll let the defense speak for themselves. Do they say that the military judge is precluded from stating in the course of proceedings that I'm going to issue a ruling now for purposes of exigency, and we'll schedule the oral argument on the motion at a subsequent time? That is an unusual order, but in any places the defense argue that the military judge can't do that if there's a particular reason that the military judge finds for having to do that. That the judge has to rule instantly to move the case along, but nonetheless will permit oral argument to consider its consequences for the remainder of the case.
I don't believe the defense says those words. However, the argument of the defense is that it was error not to give him the 39A hearing prior to the ruling. I mean,
well, we're dealing with a case in which the judge didn't say anything about, yeah, but we'll schedule the oral argument later on. That's my understanding of the posture of the case.
That's true.
Now, I want to ask you another question. You were talking about depositions. What case stands for the proposition that the military judge is precluded from prohibiting a convening authority from ordering a deposition in a particular case if the military judge determines that such a deposition would be contrary to the rule of law in that case?
I don't have a case that says that. What we have...
In fact, isn't that well within the power of the military judge? If a deposition, if the parties were to argue that a deposition would prejudice one party or another in a case, that the judge has the authority, whether he would do it or not, or she would do it in a case, it's a matter. But doesn't the judge have that authority?
Your Honor, the judge here said, I'm not going to forbid the depositions. What we're arguing is that even if he did think that he had the authority to forbid the depositions, that if the government went ahead with the depositions as ordered by the convening authority, there would be nothing that the judge could do except determine whether the depositions were admissible at court. That's his role. That would be his lane. These were not judges.
That sounds like the argument that Andrew Jackson supposedly made about the issue of whether the Cherokee Indians could be moved or not. That doesn't say that it's right.
You asked me for a case that says that the judge can forbid depositions?
No, cannot.
Cannot forbid depositions? I don't have such a case. But what I'm arguing is that in practicality, in the real world, the judge could say, I forbid the depositions, and it would mean nothing. It would basically be meaningless. The government could go ahead with the convening authority ordered depositions, and the judge could decide whether they were admissible at court, which is basically what he said here. The issue would be whether they're admissible or not.
I think I understand the government's position.
I see that my time has expired.
You have the opportunity to conclude.
In conclusion, Your Honor, the military judge did not err in this case because on the day of trial, appellant received the Article 39A session that he was entitled to concerning the disposition of his written motions, where he had the opportunity to present anything additional that he wanted the judge to hear on the motions. In addition, he was not prejudiced by the military judge's decision to wait until the parties were together, given that the Article 39 rule requires the proceedings to be conducted in the presence of the accused. For the reasons previously stated, the appellant's position was made clear to the military judge, and he had an opportunity to present any additional information on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, the government argued that the military judge does not have the authority to forbid depositions. UCMJ Article 49A gives the military judge precisely that power. Uniform Code of Military Justice, Article 49A says, any party may take oral or written depositions unless the military judge forbids it for good cause. Sorry, Your Honor?
Are you done?
Oh, with that.
Which of the two motions do you think is your strongest case?
Your Honor, the
I understand the no doubt you think they're both very strong.
On prejudice, Your Honor, the questionnaire issue is stronger. And that's because it's, while the military judge clearly erred by denying the motion on the, to forbid the deposition without holding the 39A, it's unclear at this point how it can be remedied. With regard to prejudice, Your Honor, the
questionnaire is your best case.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
The in denying the motion to forbid the deposition without holding the 39A, on at Joint Appendix at page 101, the military judge specifically said, and one of the reasons that he gave was the fact that counsel and the military judge were scattered across the globe. The military judge seemed to forget that the 2007 amendments to the Mandate for Courts Martial had authorized appearance by remote means at Article 39A sessions if authorized by the Secretary concerned. And in December of 2007, the Secretary of the Air Force did authorize appearance by remote means. So one of the very rationales that the military judge gave for not holding the 39A, in fact, wasn't present. And it's never been easier to satisfy 905H than it is today because of both the authority to hold 39A sessions by remote means and the widespread technological capability to do so. The government argued that the appellant had the opportunity to address the deposition issue and to supplement the record when the 39A session occurred on May 13th. Again, that was too late because the depositions had already occurred. Unless there are any other questions from the court, that concludes our presentation.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
And we thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.